Good morning, and welcome to Studies Through the Bible with Pastor Zach Ebarb. I am obviously Zach Ebarb, and today we're going to do kind of a shorter episode, just discussing the book of 2 Samuel. Reason for this is I would really like to put 1st, 2nd Kings, 1st, 2nd Chronicles together to kind of help you guys keep an even flow of thought as we're going through those books. The first part of Samuel and Judges, they kind of connect together, have a little bit more to them, whereas 1st and 2nd Kings were under a new king and things of this nature. So what we want to do today is we want to talk about, okay, we have 1 Samuel where we have all these events happen, right? We have Samuel, who is a judge, a prophet, and a priest, come to power, and he's leading the people, and the people decide that they want this king, and so God allows them to have a king, and he warns them of all the things that will come if they put themselves under the physical leadership of a king instead of just under the Levitical law and these judges that God would raise periodically. And we move from this to Saul, because obviously the people decide that they still want a king. They still want to do what they want to do. Excuse me. And so Saul comes into power. He starts out doing very well, and then it goes downhill very fast. He has a very big pride problem, an ego problem, and he begins to go against God and start to try to take power that he doesn't have, such as he tries to make sacrifices like the priests. There's a couple occasions where he tries to bless the people like a priest was allowed to do, even does that to Samuel himself when Samuel comes looking for him yet again at God's command for him failing to do what God has ordered. And so we see all of these things happen. Samuel dies, then Saul dies, and David comes to the throne. The David who slew the giant under the rule of Saul, who Saul hated, had jealousy towards, and who remarkably is given the trait of having a heart after God's, of being a quick to repent, being quick to ask forgiveness for sin. And so he comes to power in 1 Samuel, right? And we talked about last week how Saul kills himself in battle, falls on his own sword, all of his sons die. David comes to the throne, and that's where we find ourselves in 2 Samuel. But before we start jumping into that, because I told you originally that Samuel was all one book. There wasn't a first and second. There was just Samuel. So before we start kind of jumping into the latter half of our play here, we need to consider some things. First of all, we've had a transition of power coming into 2 Samuel. David is now going to be the king that he was promised of God that he would be 20 years later. Obviously, the book of 2 Samuel, the name kind of doesn't fit, does it? This is going to be about David. However, the purpose for that is that the story of David, the narrative of David coming to the throne as king and how David's line is going to end up as the messianic line, starts with Samuel. So we're coming into this book, and we want to keep in mind how all of these events connect, and that's kind of what the name helps us to do. No special meaning or anything like that. I told you guys last week that this book was divided into two during the Greek translation and Latin translations of the Bible. So the Septuagint, the Latin Vulgate, these kinds of things lead to this separation. But we need to talk a little bit about authorship. So 2 Samuel comes in. Obviously, Samuel's been long dead by the time that 2 Samuel, the events that are in 2 Samuel, comes into place. Technically, both 1 and 2 Samuel, I told you last week, were written anonymously. We can't really attribute any authorship. I think Samuel may have dedicated some of the work of talking about his own life in the earlier parts of 1 Samuel. Obviously, he more than likely had a hand in the book of Judges as well. But by the time we get to 2 Samuel, it's very clear that these books were written much later on, okay, like around 900 BC. It was definitely composed in the early days of the divided kingdom, which is going to come in 1 Kings. So during the time of Solomon's reign and the divided kingdom under Jeroboam, Rehoboam, is when 1 and 2 Samuel were finally put together, okay? They were finished, completed works that came together. However, as far as authors go, while it is anonymous, it's very likely that maybe Nathan and even Gad, the prophets, had a hand in writing this book. We also know that during the book of 2 Samuel, there was some outer sources that were pulled for historical information, such as the book of Jasher, which was mentioned in chapter 1 of this of the book of 2 Samuel. And you're going to see that a little bit more as we get into 1 and 2 Kings as well, where they are pulling information from royal archives and things of this nature. We're starting to get into a period of time where Israel as a nation is beginning to not only just have the biblical record, which would be, you know, the Old Testament, about their nation, and their which, you know, when we talk about the Bible's record of the history of the nation, it's not the whole purpose of it is not historical. It's to talk about the spiritual things that led to the problems that happened in the kingdom, or the problems that happened, you know, or even the blessings that happened in the kingdom, okay? And so what we're going to see here as we move further on is that they pull a lot of information from royal archives, from other historical books that are written, such as the book of Jasher, where they are discussing historical things, and our writer is bringing that in and going, so see, this is what happened, and this happened because of this bad decision or this good decision. And so 2 Samuel, it's a very good book, but it's going to be a very depressing book as well. It's going to cover the entire kingship of David, okay? And of course, the events that are going to take place in this is going to be all of the time of David's 40 years of being the king, okay, of ruling the nation. And that's going to begin around 1101 BC, okay? And that's in Hebron. Remember, we said that he rules for 7 years in Hebron, and then the other 33 in Jerusalem, which was Jebus, because it was owned by the Jebusites prior to becoming the capital of Israel. The next 33 years is going to be in Judah, Jerusalem, excuse me, from 1004 BC to 971 BC, okay? And so, you know, we have this united kingdom. Things are looking really good. David comes in. He unites everybody. He sets up this capital 7 years after becoming king. That's the capital for the entire nation. And we see all of this stuff start to happen early on in the book. Now, so we know what our dates are, right? We know our authors. We kind of know when these books were finally put together and completed. But we need to talk a little bit about literary structure. Obviously, this is all historical narrative. Our writer is going to tell us this is what happened from point A to point B in the reign of David. Most of this historical narrative, though, is going to deal with the spiritual state of the nation and of the nation's rulers. And so we can basically take this book and divide it three ways. We're going to have David at his good times, all right, his triumphs, whatever you want to call them. Then we're going to have David in a state of sin, making poor choices, making bad mistakes. To keep it in a literary fashion, you know, David's triumphs, David's transgressions, and David's troubles. That's what I've heard a lot of preachers say before. I've even seen commentators use this. I don't really care about alliteration. I think that's a cute, nonsensical thing to do. So we're going to see David doing his best, David doing his worst, and the consequences of David's actions, all right? And that's how we're going to divide this up. And I would say, you could safely say David's doing good from chapters 1 through 10 of 2 Samuel. Then it starts to take a turn from chapter 11, where we're going to see David's sin, Bathsheba, his affair, the murder of Uriah, lack of acknowledgement of his sin. He goes an entire year, friends, without ever even acknowledging what he's done. The baby that dies as a result of David's sin and Bathsheba's sin is probably 2, 3 to 4 months old by the time it has passed on, has moved on into eternity with God. And then from chapters 12 to 24 is going to be all consequences of sin. And you need to understand that 2 Samuel, it's not... Like, we're not trying to throw David under the bus, okay? I will say that David as a character is highly overrated by many pastors. They're very much, and we need to be like David and have a heart like God's. Okay, that's a very good trait. It's a very good quality to have. It's a very good thing for God to say you have a heart after God's own. But that didn't mean that David lived this grand scheme life that was right in tune with God 99.9% of the time. It meant that David was quick to repent. We see in the Bible many men that are ascribed great characteristics, but you need to understand something. These are still men. Preachers, pastors, Sunday school teachers, deacons, whatever, they tend to idolize a lot of people in the Bible. And there are certain things you want to map yourself after, but I want you to know that when we're going through 2 Samuel, you probably don't know this David, okay? You probably know David, little boy, killed a giant. There's very few people that know about a lot of the things that happened in David's life towards the end. 2 Samuel is the anyone can fall book, is what I call it. And so we can break it into these three pieces, but I kind of want to give you a full picture of the outline of 2 Samuel, because it's kind of a triangle, okay? It's just like in a story, you know, when you were in high school and they said, so you have the plot, and then you have the buildup, and then you have the climax, which is the problem or the whole reason for why we're writing what we're writing. And then the rest of it's what? The resolution and the conclusion, right? We finish our story happily ever after, whatever that may be. 2 Samuel, though, while it follows, excuse me, I'm having a terrible cough this week. While it follows that same pathway, you're not going to like the end of the story. Okay, the story starts out really good. We got this great guy. He's doing what he's supposed to be doing. He makes this terrible sin, and the book ends horribly. There's troubles in his home, and then there are troubles in his kingdom that his own son is going to orchestrate the majority of them. Excuse me again. Whew. There we go. Now, so what we have here is we're going to have his political triumphs, his spiritual triumphs, his military triumphs, boom, his sin, okay? And then it's going to be troubles in his home and then troubles in his kingdom all the way to the end of the book. Until he dies. And you know, I want you to... It's going to be somewhat of a depressing book, but I want you to learn and to understand this is why it's so important that we don't have sin in our lives, guys. This one sin, okay, this one grouping of sin, because his adultery led to his murder and all of these things, right? This one grouping of sin, this one moment of weakness, it plays out and basically ruining the rest of his kingship in the nation of Israel. His 7 years in Hebron, things are going great. He gets to Jerusalem. And then about halfway through that 33-year reign, we have this sin, maybe even only a third of the way into that 33-year reign. I'm trying to make sure I do the math right in my head. And then all of a sudden, boom, we have this whole catastrophic fallout in the life of David. And so, it's going to be kind of a rough batch, but it's 40 years of very important history. We're going to see the expansion of the kingdom under David. We're going to see David unite the kingdom very early on, which is saying something because these tribes tend to not get along very well. We're going to learn a lot about the family of David, which despite everything that happens in David's family, we're going to see the Davidic line that leads to Jesus Christ out of this period of history. In fact, I bet you probably didn't know that David had in the ballpark of about 36 children. Now, he had a lot of wives and a lot of concubines that brought these children into the world. But in Hebron, he had Michal, Saul's daughter, right? Ahinoam, Abigail, Maacah, Haggith, Abital. Whew, I can never get that one right. And Eglah. So these are the seven wives he has while he's in Hebron. I guess he decided to get one for every year. I'm just kidding. He had some of them all the way back from the book of 1 Samuel, okay? And from these ones, we're going to have Amnon. He never has a child by Michal, by the way, and that's a very tragic story. We'll talk about why that is when we get to this book. He has Kileab or Daniel, Absalom and Tamar, Adonijah, Shephartiah, whew, Lord, and Ithream, okay? So you have all these children, some that you never even hear about, right? You know Amnon, Absalom, Tamar, because those three play a pretty big part in 2 Samuel. We have Amnon rape Tamar, and then, of course, Tamar never gets married, never leaves the house of her brother Absalom. Absalom spends 2 years planning the murder of Amnon and then carries it out. But then from when he gets to Jerusalem, he has Bathsheba, Uriah's wife, right? Who later becomes his wife, and she brings to him Shemua, Shobab, Nathan, and Solomon, okay? And Solomon we know very well, right? Solomon is going to be one of the main names we talk about in 1 Kings. And then, of course, we have other wives and concubines. That's just the way I wrote it down, because we're not really ever told who all these women are. We just get the name of the kids. So we have Ibhar, Elushua, Eliphelet, Noga, Nepheg, Japhia, Elishama, Eliada, Eliphelet, and then other, because it just says, and other sons and daughters. Apparently, they weren't important enough to document. I don't know. But so we have, we know of, 36 kids, and then maybe even a few more sprinkled in. But the big ones you need to know are Amnon, Tamar, Absalom, who are going to play a huge role in 2 Samuel, and are also going to play a huge role in the consequences of David's sin. Amnon's decision with Tamar, Absalom's decision to murder Amnon, Absalom's later decision to come back home and try to overthrow his father. All of this is because of what David did and the lifestyle David lived. Because while David had a heart after God's, David also had a huge problem with lust. And that sin manifested itself in his life throughout the entire narrative. That's never a sin that he puts to bed, okay? That's never a sin that he finally removes from his life. And because of that, he's going to have all of this catastrophe befall him spiritually. We're going to see him become the king of Judah. We're going to see him get the ark back, defeat Moab. Then we're going to see him become the king of Israel, because he's going to reunite both pieces again. We're going to see the Davidic covenant that God makes with him. We're going to see him defeat Ammon and conquer Jerusalem from the Jebusites, defeat the Philistines, and defeat Syria. All that's going to happen chapters 1 through 10. All very good things, great things, good time for the nation. But then we're going to see David, of course, adultery, murder, Amnon's incest, Absalom's murder of Amnon, Absalom usurping the throne. Then we're even going to see Absalom get murdered, you know, live by the sword, die by the sword. Joab takes care of that. And then we're going to see the census that David decides to take. He gets arrogant again, decides he's going to take document of his great kingdom, and God sends a plague that wipes out many of the house, many of the people in Israel. And we're going to see it consistently illustrated in the life of David's household is disobedience. Okay, as he's going about, there's constantly going to be this principle of a disobedient life is going to lead to a troubled life. Disobedience, trouble. Disobedience, trouble. And if you're semi-intelligent, you can say that you can even see that in your own life, right? I can tell you right now, when my relationship is not where it needs to be with God, I usually have problems all along the way. Now, there are sometimes, because my relationship with God is where it's supposed to be, I have trouble along the way. You know, the world likes to do that. But there's a different kind of trouble, isn't there? When you have trouble because you're living an obedient life to God, it's people who are trying to tear you down and tell you that what you believe in is nonsense and crazy. Whereas when you have trouble in your life because of disobedience to God, It's financial problems. It's materialistic problems. It's relationship problems, right? You know, if you have a problem between you and your spouse, that's a pretty good indicator that maybe you and your spouse aren't paying attention to God. That's just a real common, smart, go-to thing. And so in 2 Samuel, we're going to see this principle discussed, that disobedient lives lead to troubled lives. And that's sadly something that never is going to leave the life of David until David dies. So, important things to take away from 2 Samuel. 3 pieces. David's good stuff, David's mistake, David's consequences, okay? Keep that in mind as you're going. If you like the more specific 6 grouping of David's triumphs and then David's troubles and then household troubles, kingdom troubles, however you want to break it up in your mind is perfectly all right. Make sure to keep in mind this is historical narrative. We're going to start seeing more things that are being pulled out of more secular history as a result of these men putting together the spiritual history of the nation as opposed to just the historical history of the nation. And then, of course, always make sure to be in obedience to God. It's going to be less problems when you're being obedient than when you are being disobedient. So I am Pastor Zach. This is our shorter episode for 2 Samuel. Get off of here and go study. Look over that book and enjoy it. I hope that you learn something from all of this. And then next week we will pick it up with 1 and 2 Kings.